What's your favorite scary movie?
Welcome to 13 Degrees of Screams,
where we watch and dissect your favorite spooky movies.
I'm your host, Alex.
And Stephanie.
And this is a mostly horror podcast.
This week, we swap out some children in The Changeling.
So, Stephanie.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Changeling before you watched it for the podcast?
I have not.
Me neither. I actually never even heard of this one before.
No, I didn't either. But I was kind of disappointed that it wasn't an actual changeling. It was...
Spoiler!
It was a ghost all along.
I mean, it was a changeling in the sense that, swapped.
Yeah, I just never thought of it, I guess, under that terminology, but I was kind of hoping for an actual changeling story.
Like the folklore changeling?
Yeah.
There's another movie, and I had messaged you to make sure you didn't watch that one, with Angelina Jolie, that I think is the same concept, where the children get swapped, but it's not actually like...
a real child. It's like a creature thing?
No, it is a real child, so it's not like... I think I might be pulling that out of my ass, but I remember watching this movie. I don't think it was like a creature of some sort. It was just a real kid.
Oh, okay.
But, so we weren't super thrilled with this one?
It didn't meet that expectation, so I was just a little disappointed that it was kind of like another switcheroo story, especially since we just came off of our doppelganger season.
I know. So this would have been a good doppelganger one.
Yeah, I just had no idea.
But, hey, you know what? We're revisiting season 4 just a tad this time.
Mm-hmm.
And
in case anyone missed it.
Yeah. I will say, I was kind of creeped out at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It gave, older horror movie vibes.
Yeah.
There's this movie. It's literally called Ghost Story. Not the ghost story we covered, but a different ghost story. And it freaked me the fuck out so much as a kid, and it gave me very similar vibes at first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just that association with that movie freaked me out a little bit.
I don't know what you're referring to. I've never heard of
this movie. You might like it. It's creepy. No, you know what? You won't like it. Long story short, this woman dies because this group of men, they kill her. I forgot why. And she comes back as a ghost and avenges herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she is so creepy. There's this scene where she pops in and scared the shit out of me as a kid. But in any case, it gave me very similar vibes, and I think it freaked me out. But then by the end, I'm like, okay, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. The big house kind of gives the whole, what's that movie? You've probably seen it. It had Owen Wilson in it.
The Haunting?
Yes. With the children.
No!
Yeah.
And Eleanor.
Screaming and stuff.
Yeah.
It had that vibe.
Yeah. But... it's based off Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Did you ever watch a show? Mm. Off topic. Girl, you need to watch it. It's so good.
I didn't choose to watch scary on my own.
It's not scary, though. Yeah, I mean, it's creepy. It has to do with ghosts, but it has more to do with, family drama.
All right.
Just watch
it. I don't like to be scared.
It's not scary.
I don't want to be scared by myself.
Okay, then we are so off topic. But watch Haunting of Bly Manor. It's a love story.
Okay.
There's ghosts, but they're just people.
Okay. They're not creepy.
No.
Ever.
People were actually upset with this because they're like...
these are just regular ghosts.
These are just... It's very sad at the end, too. It is a love story. Right. Only because I really like Meg Flanagan, and he did all those.
Okay. I do forget what her real name is, but her name is Love on You, on the show You.
Yeah. She's in both of those. I know who you're talking about.
Something with a P.
Yeah, so she's great. She's the main character in Haunting of Bly Manor.
Okay.
Anyways, completely off topic.
Yes, again.
The Changeling.
Yes.
Stephanie, not that much of a fan. I thought it was okay. I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
I wasn't bored.
A lot of people love it online.
Yeah, it's like a cult classic.
I had no idea.
I've never even heard of it.
Right, exactly. But you didn't mind it?
No. We had it as a 5 mm-hmm. on our... scariness scale.
I could agree.
Yeah. I feel like it was scarier at the beginning than where it ends up ending.
Yeah.
I will say the one thing, I don't know if you noticed this, but the background hum, it was so loud to me. I heard it.
Yeah.
I was watching on something, and then I checked YouTube just to see if it was just a weird version of the movie, but it's in there. It's just like,
oh,
it was
really?
So distracting to me.
Huh.
You didn't notice that much?
Not a ton.
Go back. Go back. You will hear it. Any case, so if anything like that bothers you, it is in this movie a little bit.
There are a few sound effects and stuff. The running water. I remember that kind of the sound, but.
No, it's just the white noise, you know.
Yeah. Okay. I think the only thing that really creeped me out was like the seance stuff, like just things that he was saying. But
that's fair.
Yeah. But then it also got funny for me.
Funny?
I texted you about
the rant.
But I'll talk.
We'll talk about it later. Okay.
Okay.
Ready to hear some movie background?
Yes.
So, The Changeling is a 1980 Canadian supernatural horror film directed by Peter Medic and featuring George C. Scott, Trish Vandeveer, and Melvin Douglas. The story revolves around a renowned composer from New York City who moves to Seattle, Washington, and resides in a mansion that he believes to be haunted. The movie debuted at the USA Film Festival in Dallas, Texas on March 26th in 1980, and was subsequently released in both Canada and the United States. It garnered positive reviews from critics and achieved significant international success, marking an early triumph for Canadian film production on a global scale. The Changeling secured 8 Genie Awards, including the coveted Best Motion Picture, and received 2 Saturn Award nominations. Regarded as a cult classic, the film is recognized as one of the most influential Canadian productions of all time. The Changeling has an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, with a critical consensus stating, George C. Scott's somber performance gives this haunted house horror a moving soul to go along with its harrowing scares.
All right.
It's super important to Canada. They're like, woo, Changeling!
Apparently. It's their favorite show.
Love this movie! Go, Changeling!
Would you like to hear about the plot?
Yeah.
John Russell, a composer from New York City, and his picturesque family are going on vacation in the mountains when their car gets stuck. When he steps into a phone booth to call for assistance, he witnesses an oncoming truck hit and kill his wife and daughter.
That was actually kind of shocking.
It was.
The visual of it, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It fully ran them over.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah, they did.
And I was kind of mad about how happy they were, though. So,
what do you mean?
I don't know. Like, I think if my parents and I got stuck in that situation in the 90s, there would have been a lot of cursing and stuff. Not like, oh, next time we'll go somewhere warm. Let's have a snowball fight. Like, it was very like, hee hee. Like,
so you resented that they were happy.
I did. That's why I called them picturesque.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I resented their happiness a little. Didn't mean that they had to die, but still resented it.
Just hurt a little.
Just
a broken leg, maybe a rib or two. Somebody's like, you deserved a little bit of that.
No.
Yeah, nasty.
Not that much. I didn't want harm. I just was like, not believable. A few months later, John moved to Seattle to teach at a college and rents a home from the agent of a local historical society named Claire Norman, who tells him that the property has been vacant for 12 years. Shortly after moving in, John begins hearing a loud banging sound every morning. And by the way, this house is huge. This is a lot for one person, I feel like.
It's a mansion.
Yes. It just seems like way too big for one person, and like he has like a maid and like a handyman that comes by every once in a while, but still, it's not like they're living there.
Right. And he's just renting it, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems like too much space after you come from an apartment in New York and you're like, I want to live in a big mansion by myself.
Yeah. And also like 12 years unoccupied. Like,
yeah.
That's fine.
Just seems like a lot.
It's all a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so after he moves in, he hears a banging sound every morning. The one night he discovers all the water taps have been turned on, culminating in him seeing the apparition of a drowned boy in a tub. The day after, he notices red glass pop and shatter in the driveway and assumes it came from the upper floors of the house. Upon investigation, he finds a door locked and boarded up in a closet that leads to an attic bedroom.
You know what?
Hmm.
Forgot about this part. For whatever reason, you know there's that weird hallway in the movie that's kind of like low ceiling slanted?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I've had a dream about that hallway.
Really?
Yeah, I saw that and it creeped me the fuck out.
Really?
Ooh. Yes. I was like, why have I feel like I've seen
this
that
place before?
And I don't know about you, but I have like really weird, like creepy dreams I've had. I swear to God, I had when I was a kid that I still remember to this day. Like I could describe it to you. And like I saw this hallway and brought back like one of those. I don't know if it's like a false memory or something, but it elicited some kind of reaction in me. And I'm like,
maybe you saw it before without realizing.
Maybe.
Or it was just used in another set.
I don't know, but I saw that hallway. I'm like, there's nothing good in that hallway.
Nah.
Not a good thing in that hallway. Not one thing.
Nope.
But yeah.
Obviously, yeah. Too, when there's a boarded up room behind a closet that was kept hidden like that, like there were shelves in front of it. They were like, please don't go in.
I know. And then, of course, what does he do?
He's like, I got to get in here so bad.
Every time I'm like, I would have been like, you know what? I don't need to know.
Yeah. Well,
honestly, if I saw that, I'd leave. I wouldn't stay there.
Right.
He's like,
after all the weird stuff that's already happened, like I would have already asked to go. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, it seems like a big house. Not for me. Sorry about the lease. I'd rather not.
He's hellbent on.
And it's not like he doesn't have the money. Like he has money.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere else, please.
Yes. In the room, John opens a music box that plays the song he had just composed and recorded downstairs. Claire, new to the Historical Society, agrees to help John research the past residents of the house, and they find a news story on a little girl that was killed outside the house in a traffic accident in 1909. They call it a traffic accident, but they said she was hit by a coal cart. I don't know if that's the same difference.
I mean, maybe they have like little stop signs for the troll cart. I don't.
Coal cart,
I guess. Coal cart.
The troll cart.
Troll cart. Troll.
Make way for the troll cart.
You know, they had trolls back in 1909.
I'm sure they did.
Trolls everywhere. And that's how she died. And then, you know what? Her death brought on the mass killings of trolls.
Ah, yes.
So that's how trolls are no longer there. Because this brought a big uprising.
I could see it.
Just some history.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
They hold a seance to see if she is the ghost haunting the house, but the spirit tells them that he's actually Joseph Carmichael.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Not
forget
her.
That girl. John determines that Joseph Carmichael was a crippled and sickly 6-year-old who was drowned in 1906 by his father, Richard, because he was unlikely to reach the age of 21, upon which he would have inherited an enormous fortune from his late grandfather. To ensure the inheritance, Richard replaced the dead boy with one procured from a local orphanage and took him to Europe under the pretense of seeking treatment for his condition.
It's just like a designer child. Like, not that one.
Yes. That one looks close.
Although the scene where he's drowned is really upsetting.
Yeah, it is. Like the thumping too against the tub. I don't like
it. Yeah, it made me feel very icky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like seeing this right now.
After years away, he returned with the boy when he was 18, claiming that he was cured. The boy is now an old man, a prominent U.S. senator who is also a major patron of the Historical Society that owns the house where his adoptive father committed the murder. So John listens back to the tapes of the seance, which I found kind of humorous because they're like a lot of one-word answers.
Uh-huh.
So it's just like, father... Well, ranch. And there had been no ranch.
I know.
Before that point, like no ranch building, which is where he's referring to. But I was like, maybe he just really likes the salad dressing.
That would be me when I'm
also
dead.
Also bring ranch.
Ranch on pizza. I will say this is about where like I was like, okay, I'm not like creeped out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
It was like the scribbling when the lady was actually there, like deducing the answers more so than it was actually listening to him, I think.
Yeah, it was too much. I'm like, now it's just a boy talking. Yeah, I'm like, come on.
Stretching out words. And I texted Alex and I was like, this ghost is you.
It's not wrong.
Maybe that's why he was still angry with him at the end. He never brought the ranch.
Never got his ranch. He never got his salad. His salad with ranch. Oop. Hi there, ho there.
Ever have a 7-layer salad with ranch? There's actually no salad in it, just ranch.
Oops, all ranch.
Yeah.
That is my salad, though.
Yeah, fair. So when John listens back to the tapes of the seance where the boy mentions a ranch and a well, this leads John to a property built on land that was once owned by the Carmichael family, where he believed the real body of Joseph Carmichael was dumped in a well. this felt like way too soon. I don't know. It just felt like all of a sudden, like there's this other property that we just have to go.
Yeah.
And this lady will understand.
There's a portal in the tree. It must be controlled from the head.
Yeah, just like Sleepy Hollow.
Snoo.
Under the house, there's a well that was filled in and built over, where they dig and find the boy skeleton with his christening medal. This ends up making the police suspicious of John, since he claims he doesn't know who the boy is. He attempts to speak with the senator at the airport, but he's restrained. The senator is disturbed to see the medal, as it is identical to the one in his possession given to him by his adoptive father.
So, that whole part, like, why didn't he just give him the first one? You know? Like,
yeah.
Just give him the...
Maybe he just buried it without thinking. I don't know.
I guess.
Or maybe he forgot to take it off him. I don't know.
Guess. And he's like, oh, shit. I guess I got to make
it. The one identifying factor.
Right. Like, why was this the one thing that he needed to make a duplicate of?
I don't know.
What are you doing?
Right after, the society cancels John's lease on the house and fires Claire. And I'd be like, fuck them. Like, let's go. Like, we've done all that we could do. Let's go. Like,
yeah.
Senator Carmichael sends police Captain DeWitt to John's home in an attempt to intimidate him and retrieve the medal. John refuses, and when DeWitt leaves to obtain a search warrant, his vehicle mysteriously overturns, killing him.
How did that happen?
No.
Not like literally, how did that
Right.
It was the ghost.
Apparently he has got some far-reaching abilities here.
Man, what a powerful little ghost.
Uh-huh. After DeWitt's death, Senator Carmichael agrees to meet with John, and he explains his findings. Carmichael angrily berates John for accusing his adoptive father of murder. Feeling he's done all he can do, John leaves the actual Joseph's christening medal, along with the only copy of the seance recording. I'm like, maybe we should just give that to the police. But yeah. Okay.
I mean, do you think they would believe it, though?
I don't know.
Like, okay, cool.
I guess.
This is a boy talking.
Yeah, fair. Ranch. Claire goes to the house to find John and is chased by Joseph's wheelchair until she falls down the stairs.
That was a little silly.
Yes. I was like, how is this wheelchair just keeping up on those stairs?
I know. On the poster of the movie, it's like the wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, huh, I wonder what that means.
Yes.
That's what that means.
Yes. When John arrives, the house begins to shake. He tries to appease Joseph's ghost, but falls from the second floor as Joseph's ghost sets the house on fire. Joseph is kind of a little ungrateful, honestly.
I know. I'm like, why? What did John help you out?
John helped a lot, really. Like, they found your body, they found the medal, they confronted the guy for you. He's done a lot of the steps.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nope. I think it really is about the ranch. Like,
okay, that's fine and all, but like, where's my ranch?
Right. No ranch.
Like, John has done more for you than anyone else in the past, what? 70 60
years yeah. or something? Yeah.
Okay, wow. Okay, bye. Like, I don't even care anymore.
Simultaneously, Senator Carmichael compares the two medals and realizes the truth. He falls into a trance, staring at the portrait of his adoptive father. John witnesses the astral form of the senator suddenly appear, climbing the burning stairs to Joseph's room.
Wow.
Yeah, and like, John doesn't really even attempt to stop him, but also, like, once he steps up the stairs, like, Joseph destroys the stairs mm-hmm. with the fire, so they're unable to be used. Claire rescues John while Carmichael witnesses the murder of the boy, Joseph, and suffers a fatal heart attack. John and Claire go to the senator's home and watch on as the senator's body is being loaded into the ambulance. The next morning, Joseph's burnt wheelchair sits amid the ruins of the mansion, and his music box begins to play a lullaby.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very confused at first when the senator showed up. I thought it was actually him.
I know. But I was he like, died. How'd you get here? He just brought him here to die, I guess.
Well, he was already dead because he had the heart attack in the building.
Oh.
So that was his ghost already. He was already dead.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I thought it was more or less like Joseph had somehow projected him there and he killed him there and then he died in the building.
Oh, maybe.
I thought point that happened first.
Point being is he wasn't actually in the house. Like, yeah. His body was.
Right. His body was, so was at like, his home.
Yeah, maybe the. Yeah, I don't know. It was very weird at first.
Also, I didn't get the impression that, like, yeah, this Carmichael guy is upset about the accusations against his adoptive father, but I don't think it's because he helped him cover it up or anything. I don't think he's even aware of what all went on.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, I think he just thinks he was adopted and he had a good life. Like,
yeah, which is kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
That he got...
Like, he had to burn for that.
Right. Like, I didn't know.
Right.
Like, what the hell? What? You have to take it up with your dad, not me.
Yeah.
Who's, I mean, his dad's probably dead.
Right.
No, he's definitely dead at this point because of how long it's been. But, like, sorry, my guy. Like,
yeah. I guess you suck, so you gotta go. That's what Joseph said.
I deemed you as not worthy to live.
Yeah.
Because my father brought you over.
To replace me, and that's not your fault. Cool.
That's fucking your fault.
Yeah.
So now you have to atone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bitch. Thanks, Joseph.
Mm. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Chalks it up.
So do you want to hear about the story behind the Changeling movie?
Yes.
So the following information was taken from an article on the Denver Public Library website, The History of the Denver House That Inspired a Horror Film by Katie Rudolph. The 1980 film The Changeling is based on the paranormal experiences of Russell Hunter while living in an old home near Cheeseman Park in Denver in the late 1960s. Russell Hunter, a musical arranger who had moved to Colorado in the mid-1960s, rented a home at 1739 East 13th Avenue in Denver in the late 1960s. He claimed to have experienced strange phenomena in the house, such as banging and crashing sounds every morning at 6 a.m.
Sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. Faucets turning on by themselves, doors opening and closing on their own, and vibrating walls. He also discovered a hidden staircase in the back of a closet leading to the third floor, where he found a trunk containing a 9-year-old school books and journal from a century ago.
No. Too much. This actually happened. And he's like, yeah, this is fine.
Right. The journal detailed the life of a disabled boy who was kept in isolation in the house. Hunter conducted a seance and claimed to have communicated with the spirit of the deceased child, who revealed a story of inheritance and deception.
What the hell?
It's like exactly this. I'm like, what are you, like, so you just told a life story. That's all.
Yeah, should have literally said inspired by a true story.
Right.
Like, if it's
that detailed. Like,
right. You know how movies, like, say that, and then you find out it's not actually, not even barely. Close? This is like a good time to do that because so far
it's exactly verbatim, really, aside from the family dying in the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
That was just a little aside that didn't even really matter.
Right. And then meanwhile, every other based on a true story is like it just happens to be in like the same location or something.
Right.
This one also has a man named Greg. Like,
oh my God, this is a true story.
Oh, goodness. According to Hunter, the child's parents buried him secretly in a field and adopted a boy from a local orphanage to pose as their deceased son. They trained the adopted boy to take on the identity of their son, and he later became successful. Hunter found human remains in a gold medallion inscribed with the deceased boy's name under another house after following the directions given during the seance.
What the f-
It's exactly verbatim. After these discoveries, Hunter claimed to have experienced more violent ghostly activity in his home, including glass doors blowing up and inner walls violently imploding. He eventually left the house and only returned to see it demolished to make way for a high-rise apartment building, claiming that as his bedroom collapsed, the material suddenly flew outward and crushed the man operating the bulldozer to death.
What even? This is actually more exciting than what happened in the movie.
Right. They should have tried just doing exactly that.
But you're already like 95% of the way there.
Just go through with it.
Commit.
However, it is worth noting that the historical details in Hunter's story have been questioned and do not exactly check out.
Surprising.
Yeah. According to fact checkers in the article, there is uncertainty about whether Hunter actually lived in Denver at 1739 East 13th Avenue in the late 1960s. Denver City directories and telephone books cannot confirm his residency at that address. However, Hunter stated in interviews that he moved to Colorado from New York City in the 1960s to help his parents manage the Three Birches Lodge in Boulder. It is confirmed that Pearl E. and Russell H. Ellis managed the Three Birches Lodge in the 1960s, and these were indeed Russell Hunter's parents. Russell Hunter was born Russell Ellis and presumably changed his name for his career in show business. The name change is supported by records such as the 1930 U.S. Census and Social Security Death Index.
Hmm. What's wrong with Hunter Ellis?
That's
a fun little name.
I don't know.
Russell Hunter? I think I like Russell Ellis better.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Hunter's a lot more common. At the start of the 20th century, a couple without children resided in a house located at 1739 East 13th Avenue. It's a lot of numbers. The couple, consisting of Henry Treat Rogers, a well-known lawyer, and his wife Kate Rogers, obtained a permit in July 1892 to construct a brick dwelling in the Wyman's edition of Denver. The home's design was entrusted to architect Henry Ten Eek Wendell. Eek?
Eek.
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 Eek. Maybe it is made up.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Okay, sorry.
Although Henry and Kate did not have their own children, they did have a niece and nephew who occasionally lived with them. Frances Clark Restine, the niece, moved from Illinois to live with the Rogers when she was 10 years old. She stayed with them until her marriage to George Restine. After spending several years in Chicago, Frances and her husband returned to Denver following the passing of her uncle, Henry Treat Rogers, in 1922. They resided in the 13th Avenue house with Kate, who officially adopted Frances as her daughter around 1927. While living in Denver, Frances became the longtime secretary for Denver Orphans Home and the president of the Globeville Day Nursery. After Kate Rogers' death in 1931, Frances inherited 1739 East 13th Avenue, along with a small fortune. Unfortunately, Frances Clark Restine passed away in 1934, so it's only 3 years later.
Eek.
Yeah.
Eek.
Eek. The nephew, on the other hand, Henry Treat Rogers II, graduated from Yale in 1914 and began working at his uncle's law firm, Rogers, Ellis, and Johnson, around 1916. He also resided in his uncle's house on 13th Avenue. However, in 1917, Henry II enlisted in World War I and never returned to the house.
Oh.
Tragically, he passed away in 1918 at the young age of 25. Conflicting reports arose regarding his cause of death. One obituary claimed it resulted from physical exhaustion on August 18, 1918, in Cincinnati, while another stated he died in France due to the effects of nervous strain from his demanding duties.
Well, that's not close.
Nope, not at all.
France and Cincinnati.
Yeah, completely just a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Yeah, for sure.
In memory of his nephew, Henry T. Rogers established a memorial fund at Yale in Henry II's name. In the article referenced above, there are dozens of unverified comments on the movie and even a few from those claiming to know Russell Hunter personally. There's one from set saying that he embellished his experience for the film, and another as a neighbor claiming he told them he was followed to his new residence by the ghost of a boy named Eric that was killed by a coal cart.
Coal cart.
Coal cart.
The troll cart. Not the troll cart.
It sounds like
he made this shit up.
Yeah, it sounds like he might have had like a little bit of a haunting experience, and then he was like, I'm just going to take it and run with it, because then people will talk to me.
Oh, my God.
And I can make a movie.
Yeah. I mean, it worked.
Eek.
Eek. So you don't believe half the shit?
I think so. I just feel like a lot of the details and stuff seem to be tacked on later on. Like that bit about coming back to see the house deconstructed.
Yeah.
That I felt like was just like an added on statement.
Yeah.
You know, like, ooh, extra spooky.
How else could I make this scary?
Extra spooky now.
The guy died because the thing hit him.
Yes.
I saw it happen.
Because I feel like that would have been included in this like very detailed report on the house.
Right. Someone literally got killed?
Yeah.
As it was being demolished?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree. Definitely embellished. There's no way he found out all that stuff.
Right.
Mm-mm.
And, like, the seance and stuff, and then digging in another property, those, I feel like, are far-fetched. Like, I know you can have a seance and stuff. It's just not a very common thing for people to do.
Having seances?
Yes.
Those happen, like, every Friday.
Oh, you do one every Friday?
Yeah.
Why haven't I been invited?
I thought you'd be a little scared.
I guess that's true.
I think the statistic is, like, 75% of Americans do seances every Friday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I never knew I would be in the minority there.
Yeah, I know. I just got to get with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to say to follow the crowd, but like 75%, that's like
the majority. Yeah, that's might as well just be like, everyone's doing it. You really should.
I mean, I didn't say it.
Yeah, and I could crack under peer pressure because I'm very sensitive.
I'm going to get a text. I did the seance. My walls are banging and I hear rain. In the distance. I want a salad now.
Really?
Yeah. Nice ranch-filled salad.
7-layer ranch house.
It's really just 2 layers, lettuce and ranch.
Okay.
Have you ever had a 7-layer salad?
No. Isn't it mostly chips and jello and shit?
No. Well, maybe. The 7-layer salad I had is like cheese and dressing and lettuce. It's like a salad.
Oh, like okay. It might be kind of like poking fun at Minnesota people, but in How I Met Your Mother, they refer to one of the family members making a 7-layer salad. It's like chips, like a full jar of mayonnaise is one layer. Like one of those big ones that you use in like a sandwich shop.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then like gummy bears and stuff like that. There's no actual salad in it.
Oh, yeah, no. Not the 7-layer salad I've had.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show and listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, giving us a 5-star rating is super helpful, and we will always appreciate it.
You can follow us on social media at 13 Degrees of Screams.
This has been 13 Degrees of Screams, and we will see you next week.
Eek!
Eek Ranch!
Ranch!
So stupid. We're dumb.